That wasn't him. He was holding that man's boots.
Troy stopped at one of the pods and checked the name.
Helen.
His gut lurched and groped for its medicine. He didn't want to remember. That was a secret ingredient. The not wanting to remember. Those were the parts that slipped away, the parts the drugs wrapped their tentacles around and pulled beneath the surface. But now, there was some small part of him that was dying to know. It was a nagging doubt, a feeling of having left some important piece of himself behind. It was willing to drown the rest of him for the answers.
The frost on the glass wiped away with a squeak. He didn't recognize the person inside, and moved on to the next pod, a scene from before orientation coming back to him. Troy recalled halls packed with people crying, grown men sobbing, pills that dried their eyes. Fearsome clouds rose on a video screen. Women were put away for safety, like a lifeboat, women and children first.
Troy remembered. It wasn't an accident. He remembered a talk in another pod, a bigger pod, with another man there, a talk about the coming end of the world, about making room, about ending it all before it ended on its own. A controlled explosion. Bombs were sometimes used to put out fires.
He wiped another frost-covered sheet of glass. The sleeping form in the next chamber had eyelashes that glittered with ice. She was a stranger. He moved on, but it was coming back to him. His arm throbbed. The shakes were gone. Troy remembered a calamity, but it was all for show. The real threat was in the air, invisible. The bombs were to get people to move, to make them afraid, to get them crying and forgetting. People had spilled like marbles down a bowl. Not a bowl, a funnel. Someone explained why they were spared. He remembered a white fog, walking through a white fog. The death was already in them. Troy remembered a taste on his tongue. Metallic. The ice on the next pane was already disturbed, had been wiped away by someone recently. Beads of condensation stood like tiny lenses, warping the light. He rubbed the glass and knew what had happened. He saw the woman inside with the auburn hair that she sometimes kept in a bun. This was not his wife. This was someone who wanted that. Wanted him like that.
Hello?
Troy turned toward the voice. The night shift doctor was heading his way, weaving between the pods, coming for him. Troy clasped his hand over the soreness on his arm. He didn't want to be taken again. They couldn't make him forget.
Sir, you shouldn't be in here.
Troy didn't answer. The doctor stopped at the foot of the pod. Inside, a woman who wasn't his wife lay in slumber. Wasn't his wife, but had wanted to be.
Why don't you come with me? The doctor asked.
I'd like to stay, Troy said.
He felt a bizarre calmness. All the pain had been ripped away. This was more forceful than forgetting. He remembered everything. His soul had been cut free.
I can't have you in here, sir. Come with me, you'll freeze in here.
Troy glanced down. He had forgotten to put on shoes. He curled his toes away from the floor. Then allowed them to settle.
Sir? Please.
The young doctor gestured down the aisle. Troy let go of his arm and saw that things were handled as needed. No kicking meant no straps. No shivering meant no needles. He heard the squeak of hurrying boots out in the hallway. A large man from security appeared by the open vault door, visibly winded. Troy caught a glimpse of the doctor waving the man down. They were trying not to scare him. They didn't know that he couldn't be scared anymore.
"You'll put me away for good," Troy said.
It was something between a statement and a question. It was a realization. He wondered if he was like Hal, like Carlton, if the pills would never take again. He glanced toward the far end of the room, knew the empties were kept there. This was where they would be buried.
"Nice and easy," the doctor said.
He led Troy to the exit. He would embalm him with that bright blue sky. The pod slid by as the two of them walked in silence. The man from security took deep breaths as he filled the doorway, his great chest heaving against his overalls. There was a squeak from more boots as he was joined by another. Troy saw that his shift was over. 2 weeks to go. He'd nearly made it. The doctor waved the large men out of the way, seemed to hope they wouldn't be needed. They took up positions to either side, seemed to think otherwise. Troy was led down the hallway, hope guiding him and fear flanking him.
"You know, don't you?"
Troy asked the doctor, turning to study him. "You remember everything." The doctor didn't turn to face him. He simply nodded.
"This felt like a betrayal. It wasn't fair."
"Why are you allowed to remember?" Troy asked. He wanted to know why those dispensing the medicine didn't have to take some of their own.
The doctor waved him into his office. His assistant was there, wearing a sleep shirt and hanging an IV bag bulging with blue liquid.
"Some of us remember," the doctor said, "because we know this isn't a bad thing we've done."
He frowned as he helped Troy onto the gurney. He seemed truly sad about Troy's condition.
"We're doing good work here," he said. "We're saving the world, not ending it. And the medicine only touches our regrets." He glanced up. "Some of us don't have any."
The doorway was stuffed with security. It overflowed. The assistant unbuckled Troy's overalls. Troy watched numbly.
"It would take a different kind of drug to touch what we know," the doctor said. He pulled a clipboard from the wall. A sheet of paper was fed into its jaws.
There was a pause, and then a pen was pressed into Troy's palm. Troy laughed as he signed off on himself.
"Then why me?" he asked. "Why am I here?"
He had always wanted to ask this of someone who might know. These were the prayers of youth, but now with a chance of some reply. The doctor smiled and took the clipboard. He was probably in his late 20s, had come on shift just a few weeks ago. Troy was a few years shy of 40, and yet this man had all the wisdom, all the answers.
"It's good to have people like you in charge," the doctor said.
And he seemed to genuinely mean it. The clipboard was returned to its peg. One of the security men yawned and covered his mouth. Troy watched as his coveralls were unsnapped and flopped to his waist. A fingernail makes a distinctive click when it taps against a needle.
"I'd like to think about this," Troy said. He felt a sudden panic wash over him. He knew this needed to happen, but wanted just a few more minutes alone with his thoughts to savor this brief bout of comprehension. He wanted to sleep, certainly, but not quite yet. The men in the doorway stirred as they sensed Troy's doubts, could see the fear in his eyes.
"I wish there was some other way," the doctor said sadly.
He rested a hand on Troy's shoulder, guided him back against the table. The men from security stepped closer. There was a prick on his arm, a deep bite without warning. He looked down and saw the silver barb slide into his vein, the bright blue liquid pumped inside.
"I don't want," he said.
There were hands on his shins, his knees, weight on his shoulders. The heaviness against his chest was from something else. A burning rush flowed through his body, chased immediately by numbness. They weren't putting him to sleep. They were killing him. Troy knew this as suddenly and swiftly as he knew that his wife was dead, that some other person had tried to take her place. He would go into a coffin for good this time, and all the dirt piled over his head would finally serve some purpose. Darkness squeezed in around his vision. He closed his eyes, tried to yell for it to stop, but nothing came out. He wanted to kick and fight it, but more than mere hands had a hold of him now. He was sinking. His last thoughts were of his beautiful wife, but the thoughts made little sense. They were the dream world invading. "She's in Tennessee," he thought. He didn't know why or how he knew this, but she was there and waiting. She was already dead and had a spot hollowed out by her side just for him. Troy had just one more question. One name he hoped to grope for and seize before he went under, some part of himself to take with him to those depths. It was on the tip of his tongue, like a bitter pill, so close that he could taste it. But then he forgot. Chapter 23. The year 2052, Fulton County, Georgia. The rain finally let up, just as warring announcements and battling tunes filled the air above the teeming hills. While the main stage was prepped for the evening's gala, it sounded to Donald as though the real action was taking place at all the other states. Opening bands ripped into their sets as the buzz of ATVs subsided to a trickle. It felt vaguely claustrophobic to be down in the bottom of the bowl by the Georgia stage. Donald sensed an unquenchable urge for height, to be up on the ridge where he could see what was going on. It left him imagining the sight of thousands of guests arrayed across each of the hills, picturing the political fervor in the air everywhere, the gelling of like-minded families, celebrating the promise of something new. As much as Donald wanted to celebrate new beginnings with them, he was mostly looking forward to the end. He couldn't wait for the convention to wrap up. The weeks had worn on him. He was looking forward to a real bed, to some privacy, his computer, reliable phone service, dinners out, and, most of all, time alone with his wife. Fishing his phone out of his pocket, he checked his messages for the umpteenth time. They were minutes away from the anthem, and then the flyover from the 141st. He had also heard someone mention fireworks to start the convention off with a bang. His phone showed that the last half dozen messages still hadn't gone through. The network was clogged, an error message popping up that he'd never seen before. At least some of the earlier ones looked as if they'd been sent. He scanned the wet banks for her, hoping to see her making her way down, a smile he could spot from any distance. Someone stepped up beside him. Donald looked away from the hills to see that Anna had joined him by the stage.
"Here we go,"
she said quietly, scanning the crowd. She looked and sounded nervous. Maybe it was for her father, who had done so much to arrange the main stage and make sure everyone was in the right place. Glancing back, he saw that people were taking their seats, chairs wiped down from the morning drizzle, not nearly as many people as it seemed before. They must be either working in the tents or off to the other stages. This was the quiet brewing before the...
"There she is."
Anna waved her arms. Donald felt his heart swell up into his neck as he turned and followed Anna's gaze. His relief was mixed with the panic of Helen seeing him there with her, the two of them standing side by side.